BBC News at 3 o'clock. 12 people have been arrested in connection with the terror attack in central London, which killed 7 people last night. 48 others were injured, some critically. The arrest took place this lunchtime after an armed raid at a block of flats in the Barking area of East London, where it's believed one of the suspects may have lived. Scotland Yard says its investigation is progressing rapidly. The attack began when a van was driven into pedestrians on London Bridge. 3 men carrying knives and wearing fake bomb vests then got out and stabbed people at bars and restaurants in nearby Borough Market. They were shot dead by armed police within 8 minutes of the first emergency call. This witness, Claire, was out for the evening with her boyfriend.
The police came over and they were running, screaming from London Bridge up Borough High Street. And they were like, run for your lives, run for your lives, run, 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 which is pretty scary. So my boyfriend and I just started running. We started getting to the other end of Borough High Street and there was a row of police with massive machine guns and shields.
4 police officers were injured in the attack, 2 of them seriously. It's emerged that one of them faced the attackers armed only with his baton outside London Bridge railway station. People from Australia, France and New Zealand are also among the victims. The Prime Minister said the attack was driven by what she called the evil ideology of Islamist extremism. Mrs. May said it was the 3rd such attack on the UK in the past 3 months, and it was time to say enough is enough. She said there had been too much tolerance of extremism in Britain and robust action was needed to stamp it out. The general election is to go ahead as planned on Thursday, but most political parties have suspended their campaigns until at least this evening as a mark of respect for the victims. But UKIP said they would not follow suit because stalling the democratic process was what the extremists wanted and it would lead to more attacks. BBC News.
And now the second part of a sparkling new production of George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion. This afternoon, the Cockney flower girl Eliza Doolittle faces her final challenge. Can she pass for a lady at the Embassy Ball? Starring Alastair McGowan, Morgana Robinson, Sean Phillips and Al Murray.
Pygmalion by me, George Bernard Shaw. Episode 2. Eliza has not passed as a duchess yet, and Higgins's bet remains unwon. But the 6 months are not yet exhausted, and just in time, Eliza does actually pass as a princess. For a glimpse of how she did it, imagine an embassy in London, one summer evening, after dark. A grand reception is in progress. A small crowd is lined up to see the guests arrive. A Rolls-Royce car drives up. Colonel Pickering, in evening dress, with medals and orders, alights, and hands out Eliza, in opera cloak, evening dress, diamonds, fan, flowers, and all accessories. Higgins follows. The car drives off, and the 3 go up the steps and into the house, the door opening for them as they approach. One of the guests is an important-looking young man, with an astonishingly hairy face.
Maestro? Maestro? Oh, Professor Higgins! Mwah! Mwah! Do you remember me?
No, I don't. Who the devil are you?
I am your pupil. Your first pupil, your best and greatest pupil. I am little Nepomuk, the marvelous boy. I have made your name famous throughout Europe. You teach me phonetic. You cannot forget me.
Do you know Colonel Pickering, the author of Spoken Sanskrit?
Good evening, Colonel.
Why don't you shave?
Oh, I have not your imposing appearance, your chin, your brow. Nobody notices me when I shave. Now I am famous. They call me Hairy-Faced Dick.
And what are you doing here among all these swells?
I am interpreter. I speak 32 languages. I am indispensable at these international parties. You are a great Cockney specialist. You place a man anywhere in London the moment he opens his mouth. I place a man in Europe.
You are wanted upstairs. Her Excellency cannot understand the Greek, gentlemen.
Thank you. Yes, immediately. this Greek diplomatist pretends he cannot speak nor understand English, he cannot deceive me. He is a son of a clock and well watchmaker. He speaks English so villainously that he dare not utter a word of it without betraying his origin. I help him to pretend, but I make him pay through the nose. I make them all pay.
Is this fellow really an expert? Can he find out Eliza and blackmail her?
We shall see. If he finds her out, I lose my bet.
Well, Eliza, now for it. Are you ready?
Are you nervous, Colonel?
Frightfully. I feel exactly as I felt before my first battle. It's the first time that frightens.
It is not the first time for me, Colonel. I have done this 50 times, hundreds of times, in my little piggery in Angel Court, in my daydreams. I am in a dream now. Promise me not to let Professor Higgins wake me. For if he does, I shall forget everything and talk as I used in Drury Lane.
Not a word, Higgins. Now, ready?
Ready.
Go.
Miss Doolittle, Colonel Pickering, Professor Higgins.
How do you do? How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do, Pickering?
How do you do?
Is that your adopted daughter, Colonel Pickering? She will make a sensation.
Most kind of you to invite her for me. Mm-hmm.
Nippermuck, find out all about her.
Excellent.
In the drawing room, the reception is in full swing. Eliza passes through. She is so intent on her ordeal that she walks like a somnambulist in a desert instead of a debutante in a fashionable crowd. They stop talking to look at her.
Eliza is a sensation.
Not a hint of nervousness.
Ah, there's Professor Higgins. He will tell us. Tell us about the wonderful young lady, Professor.
What wonderful young lady?
Oh, you know very well. They tell me there has been nothing like her in London since people stood on their chairs to look at Mrs. Langtree. Ah, there you are at last, Nippermuck. Have you found out all about the Doolittle lady?
I have found out all about her. She is a fraud.
A fraud? Oh, no.
Yes, yes, she cannot deceive me. Her name cannot be Doolittle.
Why?
Because Doolittle is an English name and she is not English.
Oh, nonsense. She speaks English perfectly.
Too perfectly. Can you show me any English woman who speaks English as it should be spoken? Only foreigners who have been taught to speak it well.
Oh, certainly she terrified me by the way she said, "How do you do?" I had a schoolmistress who taught like that and I was mortally afraid of her. But if she is not English, what is she?
Hungarian. Hungarian and of royal blood. Yeah. I am Hungarian. My blood is royal.
And did you speak to her in Hungarian?
I did. She was very clever. She said, "Please speak to me in English. I do not understand French." Oh, French. She pretends not to know the difference between Hungarian and French. Impossible. She knows both.
And the royal blood, how did you find that out?
Oh, instinct, maestro, instinct. Only the Magyar races can produce that air of the divine right. Those resolute eyes. She is a princess.
What do you say, Professor?
I say, an ordinary London girl, out of the gutter, and taught to speak by an expert. Yeah, I place her in Drury Lane.
Oh, maestro, maestro. Oh, you are mad on the subject of Cockney dialects. The London gutter is the whole world for you.
Yeah. What does your excellency say?
Oh, of course, I agree with Nepmuck. Ah. She must be a princess at least.
Not necessarily legitimate, of course, but that is undoubtedly her class.
Well, I stick to my opinion.
You are incorrigible.
Yes, here.
Where is Eliza? We must keep an eye on her.
Oh.
I don't think I can bear much more. The people all stare so at me. An old lady has just told me that I speak exactly like Queen Victoria. Oh, I am sorry if I have lost your bet. I have done my best, but nothing can make me the same as these people.
You have not lost it, my dear. You have won it 10 times over.
Yeah, I've had enough of chattering to these fools.
Eliza is tired and I am hungry. Let us clear out and have supper somewhere.
Yeah.
I say, pick lock up, will you?
Right.
I shan't be going out again.
Can Mrs. Pierce go to bed? We don't want anything more, do we?
Lord, no.
I say, Mrs. Pierce will row if we leave our coats lying about in the drawing room.
No, chuck them over the banisters into the hall. She'll find them there in the morning and put them away all right. She'll think we were drunk.
Well, we are, most likely. Are there any letters?
No, I didn't look.
I wonder where the devil my slippers are.
Only circulars and this coroneted billet do for you.
Oh, yeah, money lender.
Oh, Lord, what an evening. What a crew. What a silly tomfoolery. Oh, here are my slippers, look.
Well, I feel a bit tired. It's been a long day. The garden party, a dinner party, and the opera. Rather too much of a good thing. But you've won your bet, Higgins. Eliza did the trick, and something to spare, eh?
Thank God it's over.
Were you nervous at the garden party? I was. Eliza didn't seem a bit nervous.
No, she wasn't nervous. I knew she'd be all right. No, it's the strain of putting the job through all these months that has told on me. It was interesting enough at first, while we were at the phonetics, but after that, I got deadly sick of it. If I hadn't backed myself to do it, I should have chucked the whole thing up 2 months ago. It was a silly notion. The whole thing has been a bore.
Oh, come, the garden party was frightfully exciting. My heart began beating like anything.
Well, yes, for the first 3 minutes. But when I saw we were going to win, hands down, I felt like a bear in a cage, hanging about, doing nothing. The dinner was worse, sitting gorging there for over an hour with nobody but a damned fool of a fashionable woman to talk to. Yeah, I tell you, Pickering, never again for me. No more artificial duchesses. The whole thing has been simple purgatory.
Well, you've never been broken in properly to the social routine. I rather enjoy dipping into it occasionally myself. Makes me feel young again.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it was a great success, an immense success. Mm. I was quite frightened once or twice because Eliza was doing it so well. You see, lots of the real people can't do it at all. They're such fools that they think style comes by nature to people in their position, and so they never learn. Mm. There's always something professional about doing a thing superlatively well.
Yes. But that's what drives me mad. The silly people don't know their own silly business. However, it's over and done with, and now I can go to bed at last without dreading tomorrow.
Yes, I think I shall turn in too. Still, it's been a great occasion, a triumph for you. Good night.
Good night. Put out the lights, Eliza. And tell Mrs. Pierce not to make coffee for me in the morning. I'll take tea. What the devil have I done with my slippers?
There are your slippers!
Oh.
And there!
No.
Take your slippers and make you never have a day's luck with them.
What on earth? What's the matter? Anything wrong?
Nothing wrong with you. I've won your bet for you, haven't I? That's enough for you. I don't matter, I suppose.
You won my bet? You presumptuous insect. I won it. What did you throw those slippers at me for?
Because I wanted to smash your face. Oh. I'd like to kill you, you selfish brute. Why didn't you leave me where you picked me out of? In the gutter. You thank God it's all over, and that now you can throw me back again there, do you?
The creature is nervous after all.
Would you? Pull in, you cat! How dare you show your temper to me? Sit down and be quiet!
What's to become of me? What's to become of me?
How the devil do I know what's to become of you? What does it matter what becomes of you?
You don't care. I know you don't care. You wouldn't care if I was dead. I am nothing to you. Not so much as them slippers.
Those slippers!
Those slippers. I didn't think it made any difference now.
Why have you begun going on like this? May I ask whether you complain of your treatment here?
No.
Has anybody behaved badly to you? Colonel Pickering? Mrs. Pierce? Any of the servants?
No.
Well, I presume you don't pretend that I have treated you badly?
No.
I am glad to hear it. Perhaps you're tired after the strain of the day. Will you have a glass of champagne?
No! Thank you.
This has been coming on you for some days. I suppose it was natural for you to be anxious about the garden party, but that's all over now. There's nothing more to worry about.
No, nothing more for you to worry about. Oh, God, I wish I was dead!
Why? In heaven's name, why? Listen to me, Eliza. All this irritation is purely subjective.
I don't understand. I'm too ignorant.
It's only imagination, low spirits, and nothing else. Nobody's hurting you. Nothing's wrong. You go to bed like a good girl and sleep it off. Hmm? Have a little cry and say your prayers. That will make you comfortable.
I heard your prayers. Thank God it's all over.
Well, don't you thank God it's all over? Now you are free and can do what you like.
What am I fit for? What have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do? What's to become of me?
Oh. That's what's worrying you, isn't it? I shouldn't bother about it if I were you. I should imagine you won't have much difficulty in settling yourself somewhere or other. Well, I didn't quite realise that you were going away. You might marry, you know. Yeah. You see, all men are not confirmed old bachelors like me and the Colonel. Most men are the marrying sort. Poor devils. And you're not bad looking. It's quite a pleasure to look at you sometimes. Well, not now, of course, because you're crying and looking as ugly as a very devil. But when you're all right and quite yourself, you're what I should call attractive. That is to the people in the marrying line. You go to bed. Have a nice, good rest. And then get up and look at yourself in the glass. And you won't feel so cheap. I dare say my mother could find some chap or other who would do very well.
We're above that at the corner of Tottenham Court Road.
What do you mean?
I sold flowers. I didn't sell myself. Now you've made a lady of me, I'm not fit to sell anything else. I wish you'd left me where you found me.
Tosh, Eliza! Don't you insult human relations by dragging all this cant about buying and selling into it. You needn't marry the fella if you don't like him.
What else am I to do?
Oh, lots of things. What about your old idea of a florist's shop? Pickering could set you up in one. He's lots of money. He'll have to pay for all those togs you've been wearing today, and that, with the hire of the jewellery, will make a big hole in £200. Why? 6 months ago, you would have thought it the millennium to have a flower shop of your own. Come, you'll be all right. I must clear off to bed. I'm devilish sleepy. By the way, I came down for something. I forget what it was.
Your slippers.
Oh, yes, of course. You shined them at me.
Before you go, sir.
Huh?
Do my clothes belong to me or to Colonel Pickering?
What the devil use would they be to Pickering?
He might want them for the next girl you pick up to experiment on.
Is that the way you feel towards us?
I don't want to hear anything more about it. All I want to know is whether anything belongs to me. My own clothes were burnt.
But what does it matter? Why need you start bothering about that in the middle of the night?
I want to know what I may take away with me. I don't want to be accused of stealing.
Stealing? Oh, no, you shouldn't have said that, Eliza. That shows a want of feeling.
I'm sorry. I'm only a common, ignorant girl. And in my station, I have to be careful. There can't be any feelings between the like of you and the like of me. Please will you tell me what belongs to me and what doesn't?
Oh, you may take the whole damned houseful if you like. Except the jewels. They're hired. Will that satisfy you?
Stop, please. Oh. Will you take these to your room and keep them safe? I don't want to run the risk of their being missing.
Hello! If these belong to me instead of to the jeweller, I'd ram them down your ungrateful throat.
This ring isn't the jeweller's. It's the one you bought me in Brighton. I don't want it now.
Oh, you infamous creature!
Don't you hit me!
Hit you? How dare you accuse me of such a thing? It is you who have hit me. You have wounded me to the heart.
I'm glad. I've got a little of my own back, anyhow.
You have caused me to lose my temper. A thing that has hardly ever happened to me before. I prefer to say nothing more tonight. I am going to bed.
Well, you'd better leave a note for Mrs. Pierce about the coffee. For she won't be told by me.
Damn Mrs. Pierce, and damn the coffee, and damn you, and damn my own folly for having lavished my hard-earned knowledge and the treasure of my regard and intimacy on a heartless gutter snipe.
Nothing. I spend most of my nights here, gazing up at your window. It's the only place where I'm happy. Don't laugh at me, Miss Doolittle.
Don't you call me Miss Doolittle, do you hear? Liza's good enough for me. Oh, Freddy, you don't think I'm a heartless gutter snipe, do you?
Oh, no. Darling, how can you imagine such a thing? You are the loveliest, dearest...
Now then!
Sorry, Constable. We've only just become engaged.
Move along. Double quick.
Oh, he didn't half give me a fight, that copper. But you answered him proper.
Well, I had no idea the police were so devilishly prudish.
It's their business to hunt girls off the streets.
Well, I hope I haven't taken you out of your way. Where were you going?
To the river.
What for?
To make a hole in it.
Eliza, darling, what do you mean? What's the matter?
It doesn't matter now. There's nobody in the world now but you and me, is there?
Not a soul. Look, we must go somewhere. We can't wander about the streets all night.
Can't we? I think it'd be lovely to wander about forever.
Oh, darling.
Can I drive you and the lady anywhere, sir?
Oh, Freddy, a taxi, the very thing.
Oh, but damn it, I've no money.
I have plenty. The Colonel thinks you should never go out without £10 in your pocket. Listen, we'll drive about all night, and in the morning I'll call old Mrs. Higgins and ask her what I ought to do. I'll tell you all about it in the cab.
All righto. Ripping. Wimbledon Common.
Mr. Henry, ma'am, is downstairs with Colonel Pickering.
Well,
show them up?
They're using the telephone, Mum. Telephone into the police, I think.
What?
Mr. Henry's in a state, Mum. I thought I'd better tell you.
If you told me that Mr. Henry was not in a state, it would have been more surprising. Tell them to come up when they've finished with the police. I suppose he's lost something.
Yes, Mum.
Go upstairs and tell Miss Doolittle that Mr. Henry and the Colonel are here. Ask her not to come down till I send for her.
Yes, Mum.
Look here, Mother. Here's a confounded thing.
Yes, dear. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is it?
Eliza's bolted.
You must have frightened her.
Frightened her? Nonsense. She was left last night, as usual, to turn out the lights and all that, and instead of going to bed, she changed her clothes and went right off. Her bed wasn't slept in. She came in a cab for her things before 7 this morning, and that fool Mrs. Pierce let her have them without telling me a word about it. What am I to do?
Do without, I'm afraid, Henry. The girl has a perfect right to leave if she chooses.
But I can't find anything. I don't know what appointments I've got. I'm absolutely
lost. Good morning, Mrs. Higgins. Has Henry told you?
What does that ass of an inspector say? Have you offered a reward?
You don't mean to say that you've set the police after Eliza.
Of course. What are the police for? What else could we do?
The inspector made a lot of difficulties. I really think he suspected us of some improper purpose.
Well, of course he did. What right have you to go to the police and give the girl's name as if she were a thief or a lost umbrella or something? Oh, really?
But we want to find her.
We can't let her go like this, you know, Mrs. Higgins. What were we to do?
You have no more sense, either of you, than two children. Why...
Mr. Henry, a gentleman wants to see you very particular. He's been sent on from Wimpole Street.
Oh, bother, I can't see anyone now. Who is it?
A Mr. Doolittle, sir.
Doolittle? Do you mean the dustman?
Dustman? Oh, no, sir. A gentleman.
By George, Pick, it's some relative of hers that she's gone to. Somebody we know nothing about. Send him up. Quick.
Yes, sir.
Genteel relatives? Whoa! Now we shall hear something.
Do you know any of her people?
Well, only her father, the fellow we told you about.
Mr. Doolittle.
See here. Do you see this? You done this.
Done what, man?
This, I tell you. Look at it. Look at this silk hat. Look at this frock coat. These shoes.
Has Eliza been buying you clothes?
Eliza? Not she. Half. Why would she buy me clothes?
Good morning, Mr. Doolittle. Won't you sit down?
Oh, asking your pardon, Mum. Thank you. Oh, well, I'm that full of what has happened to me that I can't think of anything else.
What the dickens has happened to you?
I shouldn't mind if it had only happened to me. Anything might happen to anybody, and nobody to blame but Providence, as you might say. But this is something you have done to me. Yes, you, Henry Higgins.
Have you found Eliza?
Have you lost her?
Yes.
Oh, you have all the luck you have. I ain't found her, but she'll find me quick enough now after what you have done to me.
But what has my son done to you, Mr. Doolittle?
Done to me? Ruined me. Destroyed my happiness. Tied me up. And delivered me into the hands of middle-class morality.
Oh, you're raving. You're drunk. You're mad. I gave you £5. I've never seen you since.
Oh, drunk am I? Mad am I? Tell me this. Did you, or did you not, write a letter to an old blighter in America that was giving £5 million to found moral reform societies all over the world and that wanted you to invent a universal language for him?
What? Ezra D. Wanafella? Oh, he's dead.
Yes, he's dead, and I'm done for. Now, did you or did you not write a letter to him that said that the most original moralist at present in England, to the best of your knowledge, was Alfred Doolittle, a common dustman?
Oh, well, after your last visit, I remember making some silly joke of the kind.
Oh, you may well call it a silly joke. It put the lid on me right enough. Just give him the chance he wanted to show that Americans is not like us, that they recognise and respect merit in every class of life, however humble. Them words is in his blooming will, in which, Henry Higgins, thanks to your silly joking, he leaves me a share in his pre-digested cheese trust worth £3,000 a year, on condition that I lecture for his Wanafella Moral Reform World League as often as they ask me. Up to 6 times a year.
The devil he does. Oh, oh, what a lark!
A safe thing for you, Doolittle. They won't ask you twice.
It ain't the lecturing I mind. I'll lecture them blue in the face, I will, and not turn an ear. It's making a gentleman of me that I object to. Who asked him to make a gentleman of me? I was happy. I was free. I touched pretty nigh everybody for money when I wanted it. Same as I touched you, Henry Higgins. Now I am worried, tied neck and heels, and everybody touches me for money. When I was a poor man, the doctors used to shove me out of the hospital before I could hardly stand on my legs, and nothing to pay. Now they find out that I'm not a healthy man and can't live unless they looks after me twice a day. In the house, I'm not let to do an hand's turn for myself. Somebody else must do it and touch me for it. A year ago, I hadn't a relative in the world except two or three that wouldn't speak to me. Now I'm 50 and not a decent week's wages among a lot of them. I have to live for others and not for myself. That's middle-class morality. You talk of losing Eliza. Don't you be anxious. I bet she's on my doorstep by this, she that could support herself easy by selling flowers if I wasn't respectable. And the next one to touch me will be you, Henry Higgins. I'll have to learn to speak middle-class language from you instead of speaking proper English. That's where you'll come in, and I dare say that's what you've done it for.
But, my dear Mr. Doolittle, you need not suffer all this if you're really in earnest. Nobody can force you to accept this bequest. You can repudiate it. Isn't that so, Colonel Pickering?
I believe so.
That's the tragedy of it, Mum. It's easy to say chuck it, but I haven't the nerve. Which one of us has? We're all intimidated. Intimidated, Mum. That's what we are. What is there for me if I chuck it but the workhouse in my old age? I have to dye my hair already to keep my job as a dustman. If I was one of the deserving poor and had put by a bit, I could chuck it. But then why should I? Because the deserving poor might as well be millionaires for all the happiness as they ever have. They don't know what happiness is. But I, as one of the undeserving poor, have nothing between me and a pauper's uniform but this here blasted 3,000 a year that shoves me into the middle class. Excuse the expression, Mum. You'd use it yourself if you had my provocation. They've got you every way you turn. Intimidated. That's what I am. Broke. Brought up. Happier men than me will call for my dust and touch me for their tip. And I'll look on, helpless and envy them. And that's what your son has brought me to.
Well, I'm very glad you're not going to do anything foolish, Mr. Doolittle, for this solves the problem of Eliza's future. You can provide for her now.
Yes, Mum. I'm expected to provide for everyone now, out of 3,000 a year.
Nonsense! He can't provide for her. He shan't provide for her. She doesn't belong to him. I paid him £5 for her. Doolittle, either you're an honest man or a rogue.
A little of both, Henry, like the rest of us. A little of both.
But you took that money for the girl, and you've no rights to take her as well.
Henry, don't be absurd. If you really want to know where Eliza is, she's upstairs.
Upstairs? Well, then I shall jolly soon fetch her downstairs.
Be quiet, Henry. Sit down.
Sit down,
dear, and listen to me.
Oh, very well, very well, very well. But I think you might have told us this half an hour ago.
Eliza came to me this morning. She told me of the brutal way you two treated her.
What? My dear Mrs. Higgins, she's been telling you stories. We didn't treat her brutally. We hardly said a word to her. And we parted on particularly good terms. Higgins, did you bully her after I went to bed?
Just the other way about. She threw my slippers in my face. She behaved in the most outrageous way. I never gave her the slightest provocation. The slippers came bang into my face the moment I entered the room, before I had uttered a word, and used perfectly awful language.
But why? What did we do to her?
I think I know pretty well what you did. The girl is naturally rather affectionate, I think. Isn't she, Mr. Doolittle?
Very tender-hearted, Mum. Takes after me.
Just so. She had become attached to you both. She worked very hard for you, Henry. I don't think you quite realise what anything in the nature of brain work means to a girl like that. Well, it seems to me that when the great day of trial came and she did this wonderful thing for you without making a single mistake, you two sat there and never said a word to her, but talked together of how glad you were that it was all over and how you'd been bored with the whole thing. And then you were surprised because she threw your slippers at you. I should have thrown the fire irons at you.
Oh, we said nothing except that we were tired and wanted to go to bed. Did we, Pig?
That was all.
Mm. Quite sure.
Absolutely. Really, that was all.
You didn't thank her, or pet her, or admire her, or tell her how splendid she'd been.
But she knew all about that. We didn't make speeches to her, if that's what you mean.
Perhaps we were a little inconsiderate. Is she very angry?
I'm afraid she won't go back to Wimpole Street. Especially now that Mr. Doolittle is able to keep up the position that you thrust upon her. But she says she's quite willing to meet you on friendly terms and let bygones be bygones.
Is she, by George? Oh!
If you promise to behave yourself, Henry, I'll ask her to come down. If not, go home, for you've taken up quite enough of my time.
All right. Very well. Pick, you behave yourself. Let us put on our best Sunday manners for this creature that we picked out of the mud.
Now, Henry Higgins, have some consideration for my feelings as a middle-class man.
Remember your promise, Henry. Mr. Doolittle, will you be good enough as to step out on the balcony for a moment? I don't want Eliza to have the shock of your news until she's made it up with these two gentlemen. Would you mind?
As you wish, lady. Anything to help Henry to keep her off my hands.
Ask Miss Doolittle to come down, please.
Yes, Mum.
Now, Henry, be good.
I am behaving myself perfectly.
He is doing his best, Mrs. Higgins.
Henry, dearest, you don't look at all nice in that attitude.
I was not trying to look nice, Mother.
It doesn't matter, dear. I only wanted to make you speak.
Why?
Because you can't speak and whistle at the same time.
Oh, where the devil is that girl? Are we to wait here all day?
How do you do, Professor Higgins? Are you quite well?
Am I?
But of course you are. You are never ill. So glad to see you again, Colonel Pickering. Quite chilly this morning, isn't it?
Don't you dare try this game on me. I taught it to you, and it doesn't take me in. Get up and come home, and don't be a fool.
Very nicely put indeed, Henry. No woman could resist such an invitation.
You let her alone, Mother. Let her speak for herself. You will jolly soon see whether she has an idea that I haven't put into her head or a word that I haven't put into her mouth. I tell you, I have created this thing out of the squashed cabbage leaves of Covent Garden, and now she pretends to play the fine lady with me.
Yes, dear, but you'll sit down, won't you?
Will you drop me altogether now that the experiment is over, Colonel Pickering?
Oh, don't. You mustn't think of it as an experiment. It shocks me somehow.
Oh, I'm only a squashed cabbage leaf.
No.
But I owe so much to you that I should be very unhappy if you forgot me.
It's very kind of you to say so, Miss Doolittle.
It's not because you paid for my dresses. I know you are generous to everybody with money, but it was from you that I learnt really nice manners, and that is what makes one a lady, isn't it? You see, it was so very difficult for me with the example of Professor Higgins always before me. I was brought up to be just like him, unable to control myself and using bad language on the slightest provocation. And I should never have known that ladies and gentlemen didn't behave like that if you hadn't been there.
Still, he taught you to speak, and I couldn't have done that, you know.
Of course, that is his profession.
Damnation!
Henry.
It was just like learning to dance in the fashionable way. There is nothing more than that in it. But do you know what began my real education?
What?
Your calling me Miss Doolittle that day when I first came to Wimpole Street. That was the beginning of self-respect for me. And there were 100 little things you never noticed because they came naturally to you. Things about standing up and taking off your hat and opening doors.
Oh, that was nothing.
Yes, things that showed you thought and felt about me as if I was something better than a scullery maid. Though, of course, I know you would have been just the same to a scullery maid if she had been let in the drawing room.
You never took off your boots in the dining room when I was there.
Well, you mustn't mind that. Higgins takes off his boots all over the place.
I know. I'm not blaming him. It is his way, isn't it? But it made such a difference to me that you didn't do it. You see, really and truly, apart from the things anyone could pick up, the dressing and the proper way of speaking and so on, the difference between a lady and a flower girl is not how she behaves, but how she is treated. I shall always be a flower girl to Professor Higgins, because he always treats me as a flower girl, and always will. But I know I can be a lady to you, because you always treat me as a lady, and always will.
Please don't grind your teeth, Henry.
Well, this is really very nice of you, Miss Doolittle.
I should like you to call me Eliza now, if you would.
Oh, thank you. Eliza, of course.
And I should like Professor Higgins to call me Miss Doolittle.
I'll see you damned first.
Henry, Henry.
Why don't you slang back at him? Don't stand it. It would do him a lot of good.
I can't. I could have done it once. But now I can't go back to it. Last night, when I was wandering about, a girl spoke to me, and I tried to get back into the old way with her, but it was no use. You told me, you know, that when a child is brought to a foreign country, it picks up the language in a few weeks and forgets its own. Well, I am a child in your country.
Yes.
I have forgotten my own language and can speak nothing but yours. That's the real break-off with the corner of Tottenham Court Road. Leaving Wimpole Street finishes it.
Oh, but you're coming back to Wimpole Street, aren't you? You'll forgive Higgins.
Forgive? Will she, by George? Let her go. Let her find out how she can get on without us. She will relapse into the gutter in 3 weeks without me at her elbow.
He's incorrigible, Eliza. You won't relapse, will you?
No, not now. Never again. I have learnt my lesson. I don't believe I could utter one of those old sounds if I tried.
Doolittle, what do you say to that?
Doolittle?
Ow!
Ah, just so. Ow! Ow! Victory! Victory!
Can you blame the girl? Don't look at me like that, Eliza. It ain't my fault. I've come into money.
You must have touched a millionaire this time, Dad.
I have, but I'm dressed something special today. I'm going to St. George's, Hanover Square. Your stepmother is going to marry me.
You're going to let yourself down to marry that low, common woman?
He ought to, Eliza. Why has she changed her mind?
Intimidated, Governor. Intimidated. Middle-class morality claims its victim. Won't you put on your hat, Eliza, and come and see me turned off?
If the Colonel says I must, I'll demean myself and get insulted for my pains like enough.
Don't be afraid. She never comes to words with anyone now, poor woman. Respectability has broken all the spirit out of her.
Be kind to them, Eliza. Make the best of it.
Oh, well, just to show there's no ill feeling, I'll be back in a moment.
I feel uncommon nervous about the ceremony, Colonel. I wish you'd come and see me through it.
But you've been through it before, man. You were married to Eliza's mother.
Who told you that, Colonel?
Well, nobody told me, but I concluded that.
No, that ain't the natural way, Colonel. It's only the middle-class way. My way was always the undeserving way. But don't say nothing to Eliza. She don't know. I always had a delicacy about telling her.
Quite right. We'll leave it so, if you don't mind.
And you'll come at the church, Colonel, and put me through straight?
With pleasure. As far as a bachelor can.
May I come, Mr. Doolittle? I should be very sorry to miss your wedding.
Oh, I should indeed be honoured by your condescension, ma'am. And my poor old woman would take it as a tremendous compliment. She's been very low, thinking of the happy days that are no more.
I'll order the carriage and get ready. I shan't be more than 15 minutes. Oh, Eliza, I'm going to the church to see your father married. You had better come in the room with me. Colonel Pickering can go on with the bridegroom.
Bridegroom? Oh, what a word. Makes a man realise his position somehow. Oh.
Before I go, Eliza, do forgive Higgins and come back to us.
I don't think Dad would allow me. Would you, Dad?
They played you off. Very cunning, Eliza. Them two sportsmen. If it had been only one of them, you could have nailed him. But you see, there was two, and one of them chaperoned the other, as you might say. It was artful of you, Colonel, but I bear you no malice. I should have done the same myself. I've been the victim of one woman after another all my life, and don't grudge you two getting the better of Eliza. I shan't interfere. Right, it's time for us to go, Colonel. So long, Henry. See you in St. George's, Eliza.
Do stay with us, Eliza.
Well, Eliza, you've had a bit of your own back, as you call it. Have you had enough? And are you going to be reasonable? Or do you want any more?
You want me back only to pick up your slippers and put up with your tempers and fetch and carry for you.
I haven't said I wanted you back at all.
Oh, indeed. Then what are we talking about?
About you, not about me. If you come back, I shall treat you just as I have always treated you. I can't change my nature, and I don't intend to change my manners. My manners are exactly the same as Colonel Pickering's.
That's not true. He treats a flower girl as if she was a duchess.
And I treat a duchess as if she was a flower girl.
I see. The same for everybody.
Just so.
Like father?
Without accepting the comparison at all points, Eliza, it is quite true that your father is not a snob, and that he will be quite at home in any station of life to which his eccentric destiny may call him. The great secret, Eliza, is not having bad manners or good manners or any other particular sort of manners, but having the same manner for all human souls. In short, behaving as if you were in heaven, where there are no third-class carriages, and one soul is as good as another.
Amen. You are a born preacher.
The question is not whether I treat you rudely, but whether you ever heard me treat anyone else better.
I don't care how you treat me. I don't mind your swearing at me. I don't mind a black eye. I've had one before this, but I won't be passed over.
You talk about me as if I were a motorbus.
So you are a motorbus, all bounce and go and no consideration for anyone. But I can do without you. Don't think I can't.
I know you can. I told you you could. Oh. You never asked yourself, I suppose, whether I could do without you.
Don't you try to get around me. You'll have to do without me.
Oh, I can do without anybody. I have my own soul, my own spark of divine fire. But I shall miss you, Eliza. I have learnt something from your idiotic notions. I confess that, humbly and gratefully. And I have grown accustomed to your voice and appearance. I like them, rather.
Well, you have both of them on your gramophone and in your book of photographs. When you feel lonely without me, you can turn the machine on. It's got no feelings to hurt.
I can't turn your soul on. Leave me those feelings. And you can take away the voice and the face. They are not you.
Oh, you are a devil. You can twist the heart in a girl as easy as some could twist her arms to hurt her. Mrs. Pierce warned me. Time and again she has wanted to leave you, and you always got round her at the last minute. And you don't care a bit for her, and you don't care a bit for me.
I care for life, for humanity. And you are a part of it that has come my way and been built into my house. What more can you or anyone ask?
I won't care for anybody that doesn't care for me.
Commercial principles, Eliza. Like psyllium violets, isn't it?
Don't sneer at me. It's mean to sneer at me.
I have never sneered in my life. Sneering doesn't become either the human face or the human soul. I am expressing my righteous contempt for commercialism. I don't and won't trade in affection. You call me a brute because you couldn't buy a claim on me by fetching my slippers and finding my spectacles. You are a fool. I think a woman fetching a man's slippers is a disgusting sight. Did I ever fetch your slippers? I think a good deal more of you for throwing them in my face. No use slaving for me and then saying you want to be cared for. Who cares for a slave? If you come back, come back for the sake of good fellowship, for you'll get nothing else. You've had 1,000 times as much out of me as I have out of you. And if you dare to set up your little dog's tricks of fetching and carrying slippers against my creation of a duchess, Eliza, I'll slam the door in your silly face.
What did you do it for if you didn't care for me?
Why, because it was my job.
You never thought of the trouble it would make for me?
Would the world ever have been made if its maker had been afraid of making trouble? Making life means making trouble.
I'm no preacher. I don't notice things like that. I notice that you don't notice me.
No, oh, Eliza, you're an idiot. I waste the treasures of my Miltonic mind by spreading them before you. Once for all, understand that I go my way and do my work without caring tuppence what happens to either of us. I am not intimidated like your father and your stepmother. So you can come back or go to the devil, which you please.
What am I to come back for?
For the fun of it. That's why I took you on.
And you may throw me out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to.
Yes, and you may walk out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to.
And live with my stepmother?
Yes, or sell flowers.
Oh, if I only could go back to my flower basket, I should be independent of both you and Father and all the world. Why did you take my independence from me? Why did I give it up? I'm a slave now for all my fine clothes.
Not a bit. I'll adopt you as my daughter and settle money on you, if you like. Or would you rather marry Pickering?
I wouldn't marry you if you asked me. And you're nearer my age than what he is.
Than he is, not than what he is.
Oh, I'll talk as I like. You're not my teacher now.
I don't suppose Pickering would, though. He's as confirmed an old bachelor as I am.
That's not what I want. And don't you think it. I've always had chaps enough wanting me that way. Freddie Hill writes to me twice and three times a day. Sheets and sheets.
Damn his impudence.
He has a right to if he likes, poor lad. And he does love me.
Well, you have no right to encourage him.
Every girl has a right to be loved.
What? By fools like that?
Freddie's not a fool. And if he's weak and poor and wants me, maybe he'd make me happier than my betters that bully me and don't want me.
Can he make anything of you? That's the point.
Perhaps I could make something of him.
Ugh.
But I never thought of us making anything of one another, and you never think of anything else. I only want to be natural.
In short, you want me to be as infatuated about you as Freddy, is that it?
No, I don't. That's not the sort of feeling I want from you. And don't you be too sure of yourself or of me. I could have been a bad girl if I'd liked. I've seen more of some things than you for all your learning. Girls like me can drag gentlemen down to make love to them easy enough, and they wish each other dead the next minute.
Of course they do. Then what in thunder are we quarrelling about?
I want a little kindness. I know I'm a common ignorant girl and you a book-learned gentleman, but I'm not dirt under your feet. What I did was not for the dresses and the taxis. I did it because we were pleasant together and I came to care for you. Not to want you to make love to me and not forgetting the difference between us, but more friendly-like.
Well, of course. That's just how I feel. Yeah, and how Pickering feels. Eliza, you're a fool.
But that's not a proper answer to give me.
Well, it's all you get until you stop being a common idiot. If you're going to be a lady, you'll have to give up feeling neglected if the men you know don't spend half their time snivelling over you and the other half giving you black eyes. If you can't stand the coldness of my sort of life and the strain of it, go back to the gutter. Work till you are more a brute than a human being and then cuddle and squabble and drink till you fall asleep. Oh, it's a fine life, the life of the gutter. It's real, it's warm, it's violent. You can feel it through the thickest skin. You can taste it and smell it without any training or any work. Not like science and literature and classical music and philosophy and art. You find me cold, unfeeling, selfish, don't you? Anyway, be off with you to the sort of people you like. Marry some sentimental hog or other with lots of money and a thick pair of lips to kiss you with and a thick pair of boots to kick you with. If you can't appreciate what you've got, you'd better get what you can appreciate.
Oh, you are a cruel tyrant.
I can't talk to you. You turn everything against me. I'm always in the wrong. But you know very well all the time that you're nothing but a bully. You know I can't go back to the gutter, as you call it, and I have no real friends in the world but you and the Colonel. You know well I couldn't bear to live with a low common man after you two, and it's wicked and cruel of you to insult me by pretending I could. You think I must go back to Wimbold Street because I have nowhere else to go but Father's. But don't you be too sure that you have me under your feet to be trampled on and talked down. I'll marry Freddy, I will, as soon as I'm able to support him.
Freddy? That young fool? That poor devil who couldn't get a job as an errand boy, even if he had the guts to try for it? Woman, do you not understand that I have made you consort for a king?
Freddy loves me. That makes him king enough for me. I don't want him to work. He wasn't brought up to it as I was. I'll go and be a teacher.
What'll you teach in heaven's name?
What you taught me. I'll teach phonetics. I'll offer myself as an assistant to that hairy-faced Hungarian.
What? That imposter? That humbug? That toadying ignoramus? Teach him my methods, my discoveries. You take one step in his direction and I'll wring your neck. Do you hear?
Ring away. What do I care? I knew you'd strike me someday. Aha! Now I know how to deal with you. What a fool I was not to think of it before. You can't take away the knowledge you gave me. You said I had a finer ear than you. And I can be civil and kind to people, which is more than you can. Oh. Aha! That's done, you Henry Higgins, it has. Now I don't care that for your bullying and your big talk. I'll advertise it in the papers that your duchess is only a flower girl that you taught, and that she'll teach anybody to be a duchess just the same in 6 months for 1,000 guineas. Oh, when I think of myself crawling under your feet and being trampled on and called names, when all the time I had only to lift up my finger to be as good as you, I could kick myself.
You damned impudent slut, you. But it's better than snivelling. Better than fetching slippers and finding spectacles, isn't it? By George, Eliza, I said I'd make a woman of you, and I have. I like you like this.
Yes. You can turn round and make up to me now that I'm not afraid of you. And can do without you.
Of course I do, you little fool. 5 minutes ago you were like a millstone round my neck. Now you're a tower of strength, a consort battleship. You and I and Pickering will be 3 old bachelors together instead of only 2 men and a silly girl.
The carriage is waiting, Eliza. Are you ready?
Quite. Is the professor coming?
Certainly not. He can't behave himself in church. He makes remarks out loud all the time on the clergyman's pronunciation.
Then I shall not see you again, Professor. Goodbye.
Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Mother. By the way, Eliza, order a ham and Stilton cheese, will you? And buy me a pair of reindeer gloves, number 8s, and a tie to match that new suit of mine at Elan Binman's. You can choose the colour.
Number 8s are too small for you if you want them lined with lamb's wool. You have 3 new ties that you have forgotten in the drawer of your washstand. Colonel Pickering prefers double Gloucester to Stilton. I telephoned Mrs. Pierce this morning not to forget the ham. What you are to do without me, I cannot imagine.
I'm afraid you've spoiled that girl, Henry. I should be uneasy about you and her if she were less fond of Colonel Pickering.
Pickering? Nonsense! She's going to marry Freddy! Freddy! Freddy!
In episode 2 of Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, Higgins was played by Alistair McGowan, Pickering by Hugh Fraser, and Eliza by Morgana Robinson. Doolittle was played by Al Murray, Nepomuk by David Sturzaker, and Mrs. Higgins by Sean Phillips. Freddie Ainsford Hill was played by Tom Forrester, and the parlour maid by Charlotte Page. The ambassador was John Dougal, and the ambassador's wife, Sarah Ridgway. Pygmalion was adapted and directed for radio by Emma Harding.
And you can hear Alistair McGowan's new play about the scandalous first night of Pygmalion, the B word, on the BBC iPlayer radio app. The news is next, and then you can join Radio 4's book club discussing Hari Kunzru's novel Gods Without Men. That's in a couple of minutes. BBC News at 4 o'clock. 12 people have been arrested in Barking in East London in connection with last night's terror attack, which killed 7 people. 48 others were injured, 21 of them critically. No details have been released about the attackers, although it's understood police have established their identities. Catherine Stancheshin reports from the scene of today's arrests.
A police cordon still in place here at the Elizabeth Fry Flats on King's Road in Barking, and a major forensic investigation underway after officers carried out a raid here earlier this morning. According to neighbours, this location may have been where one of the attackers was living, although that hasn't been confirmed. Local residents say they heard loud bangs and what may have been gunshots before seeing several men and a woman taken away. Images also show several people lying on the ground outside.
The attack began at about 10 o'clock last night when a white van drove into pedestrians on London Bridge. 3 men wearing fake suicide vests got out and stabbed people nearby. 8 minutes after the first emergency call, they were shot dead by armed officers near Borough Market. 4 police officers were injured in the attack. One was off duty and was stabbed as he struggled with one of the attackers. Another was a British Transport police officer who faced a suspect with his baton. It's been confirmed that people from France, Spain, Australia and New Zealand are among those to have been hurt. Downing Street has announced a minute's silence to be observed at 11 o'clock on Tuesday. Theresa May said the killings, along with those in Manchester and in Westminster, showed the UK faces a new type of terrorism. Speaking outside Number 10, she said, "Enough is enough," and condemned what she called the evil ideology of Islamist extremism. She has since visited some of the injured at King's College Hospital in South London. Mrs. May also confirmed the general election would go ahead on Thursday. The main parties have suspended their campaigns, with the exception of UKIP. BBC News. In half an hour, Roger McGough presents a selection of your requests for poems which celebrate the body in all its forms, whether stretched, flabby, swollen or svelte. Poetry Please is at 4:30. And much later tonight, the poet Michael Simmons-Roberts presents Something Understood, which looks into the mirror for insight and revelation, reckoning and resolution, and he discovers a beguiling world through the looking glass. Join us for some late-night listening at 11:30. Now on Radio 4, it's time for our monthly date with James Naughtie and his chosen book for June.
Hello and welcome to Book Club from the Hay Festival of Literature, where this month's group of readers is being watched by an even bigger audience ranged around it. And in the midst of this vast throng is our author, Hari Kunzru, with in front of him a copy of Gods Without Men, the novel we're going to discuss, which takes us to the Mojave Desert in the American West, where he tells an ingenious story that flits across time using the disappearance of a